questions yesterday with your spouse about needs and what that looks like for you to meet those needs for one another. We already had a great report this morning from the shop about actually putting it into practice. So thanks for sharing that. One of the things that I just want to encourage you with about these needs is that one of the things that we found is it's given us a really good common vocabulary. So many times you hear marriage challenges centering around the idea that we just don't communicate well. We can't communicate. We don't understand each other. And we found that being able to communicate to one another in the context of needs, really even more than the circumstances, but kind of bringing it down to what needs were met or what needs weren't met, has been really helpful in our communication. One thing I would really encourage you guys to do is don't forget what your partner's needs are. If you have to, stick them on a sticky note, put it on your bathroom mirror, put it on the visor of your car. The more you have that in front of you and you see that, the more aware you are of your person. And it gives you a regular opportunity to pray and say, God, I know you're loving on Randy today. How can I join you? How can I be part of what you're doing to love him, care for him today? So just keeping those needs there are important. I think it's also important to note that a lot of times when you take that assessment, you find that, okay, we don't have any of the same needs. And in fact, my spouse's top need happens to be my bottom need. So what are you going to do about that? Well, that's true for Randy and I. One of his top needs is affection, and one of my bottom needs is affection. And it's, I'll say that meaning it's not that I don't like hugs and kisses. It just never occurs to me to do that. It just doesn't cross my mind. And so there have been times throughout our marriage where Randy's been really vulnerable and said, hey, it would really mean a lot to me if you just kind of reach over and grab my hand when we're walking, or you just give me a hug, or just express some verbal affection towards me. And I have to be honest, it's not easy. It doesn't come easy for me because it never crosses my mind. But I think that brings up the key point here is that this is about growth. And it's, yeah, we want a healthy marriage and we want a vibrant relationship with our person. But ultimately, it's about each of our individual transformation into the image of Christ. Jesus is all these things to us. He is a comforter. He does treat us with respect. He does accept us. And so in my personal growth, that's my goal. I want to be more like him. So these needs are about giving to my spouse, not getting. Sometimes when we first become aware that we have them, it's all about, okay, what are you going to do for me? And then I get hurt or I get mad because you're not doing it for me like you should. But we need to remember this is about giving. We are growing into being people that serve first. Jesus served first. So that's where we're headed. So for sure, feels great when our physical needs are met. We all acknowledge we have them, food, air, water, sleep. Good things happen when those needs are met, usually. And bad things happen when they're not met. Well, it's the same with emotional needs, relational needs. Whenever we feel cared for, loved, supported, encouraged, we feel good. Healthy thinking happens. Healthy behavior happens. And the same way with physical needs, when relational, emotional needs aren't met, some not so good things happen. We might feel unimportant. We might feel uncared for, unvalued, hurt. We may even fall into unhealthy thinking and then some unhealthy behavior patterns as well. So it's true that all marriages experience difficulties and pains, but the truth is the majority of those, they're not intentional. In fact, there's a metaphor we like to think about with marriage hurt, and actually any kind of relational hurt. It's like if you and I went bowling together and it was your turn, you were up, you grabbed your ball off the, whatever that thing is called, and you accidentally dropped it on my foot. well, that was an accident. You sure did not mean to do that to me. But the truth is, it hurt. And so there's a need to acknowledge that even though a good portion of the hurt in our relationship is unintentional, it still hurts. And because we love the person that we're sitting next to, hopefully, we care that they're hurting. So it's not a question of if we're going to hurt each other. It's just, what are we going to do when we hurt each other? What do we do with that when we hurt each other? There's been tons of scientific research on, you know, the neuroscience and just brain science about how there's a place in your brain where all of your emotionally charged memories are stored, called the amygdala, for you people who like science stuff. But anyway, that is the place where they're stored. And so we use kind of a picture of a cup. It's like a cup that holds those emotions. And so you can imagine that when water is poured into a cup a little bit at a time, the water level rises. And then when that final shot of water is poured in, there's spillage. And so a lot of times, that's how we picture what's actually going inside of us. And we call that the emotional cup. We're going to be looking at that in the book. If you want to go ahead and flip there. Is on page 15. Yeah, thank you. I'm thinking that most of us might have come into marriage thinking that our partner either had an empty cup or maybe even had a full cup of positive emotions because we were in love and everything was perfect when you feel that kind of ooey-gooey feeling. But it doesn't take long to realize that's probably not true. You may have even heard the metaphor used of bringing baggage into your marriage relationship. And the truth is, most of us don't enter our marriage with a cup only full of positive. There's things that happen to us before we're married, things that we bring with us. So if you look at that drawing, or that illustration, you see it. We're going to start at the bottom, and we're going to kind of work our way up the diagram, talk just briefly about each one of these. So at the bottom is hurt. We put that at the bottom because it is most often what we feel first. When a need goes unmet, or there's an offense, or we feel trampled on by someone else, hurt is what we usually feel first when our needs go unmet. But it's a kind of a general term, and you can see it incorporates other things like sadness, disappointment, there's embarrassment, rejection, betrayal, loneliness, neglect. All of those kinds of feelings could be categorized as hurt. And then the next layer is anger. So for a lot of us, we actually don't ever acknowledge the hurt. We just go right to the anger. We don't even give ourselves time to feel that hurt. And we may not even be conscious of the fact that we were hurt. A lot of that's because it's really painful to focus on that, and so we hide that hurt. We don't want to be vulnerable, and we often turn that outward away from us to hurt those that hurt us. It's kind of a defense mechanism, and it helps protect us from feeling vulnerable. Anger can look like impatience, maybe depression, jealousy, sarcasm, emotional distance. I think it's important to note that anger is not a bad emotion. It's actually a God-given emotion. It's just what we do with that that makes the difference for us. So let me give you an example. So I'm going to just say that so we can see how this flows. If I were to reach out to my spouse one evening because I'm feeling somewhat affectionate, and it is desiring some closeness. And my spouse goes, not really feeling it tonight. Got a headache, I'm tired. Whatever could be a very legitimate reason.
The first thing I'm going to
feel is some
rejection.
Just a little bit of.
They might feel some rejection.
Get the other mic. It's probably better. How's that? See if it turned off.
I might feel some rejection. Well, probably pretty soon after feeling rejection, I might kind of be mad. I might get angry that my desire for closeness was rejected. All right, let's look at the next one, fear. So fear's the third layer there. And in our little example, let's say a week goes by, and I'm kind of in the mood again, and so I reach out to my spouse, or I'm thinking I'm going to reach out to my spouse. Here's where fear comes in. Wait, that just happened last week. There was rejection there. It didn't feel good. I don't know if I should do that again. What if it happens again? So now I have a little bit of fear in my head. All right, let's look at guilt. That comes next. So, if you're like me, you might do this, but if you're not, I hope you're not like me. There's this idea of retaliation when I'm angry. So, I reach out, I'm being vulnerable, I get a no, I'm angry, I'm afraid it's going to happen again, so I might just ice you out for a week or two. I might slam some doors. I might say some really snippy, snotty things back to you. So now what I have in my cup, because I didn't respond to you in a kind, loving, generous way, I actually wanted to hurt you back. Now I have guilt in my cup. All right, so next is condemnation. So here's where the enemy comes in and starts feeding me lies about this scenario. Well, I initiated some intimacy with my spouse. They rejected me. I bet they don't love me. I bet this extra 10 pounds is a turnoff for my spouse. I wonder if they're having an affair with somebody else. You know what? I don't really deserve to be loved in that way anyway. You hear that shame and condemnation, those things are coming from the enemy. So now I've got this full cup, and there's very little room at the top for positive emotions. But this is just one little tiny incident. You multiply that times the myriad of things that are coming at us from our spouse, our kids, our parents, our coworkers, our world. You can see how easy it would be for our cup to start brimming over. So if you look at the top, you can see some of that spillage. So let's take a look at that, starting on the left. See physical effects. So there might be sleep and appetite disturbances, headaches, stomach aches, digestive problems. We may even turn to food for relief. Next is controlling behaviors, obsessive, compulsive, anxiety, insecurity. If there's a lot of fear in my cup, there's going to be a lot of controlling behaviors. It's the only way I can manage the fear. There may be loss of energy or concentration. It could be depressed mood, impatience, quick temper, escaping into work, social media, infidelity, pornography, alcohol, drugs, TV, computer, whatever it is that we're doing to numb out. To not have to feel some of the things that are in this cup, we might pursue that. And as a consequence, a lot of positive emotions are lost to where we just don't really feel anything good. We don't feel hope. We don't feel joy. Don't tell me again. Go ahead and turn the page with me, page 16. This is just a restatement of those symptoms that flow out of the emotional cut. Would you take about a minute and just read through those? We've already read through them out loud, but would you just read through those and just quietly yourself? Would you just take your pen or pencil and would you circle or would you mark any of those symptoms that you see in yourself? These are behaviors that you might see come out of your cup if it's full. Just take a minute to do that.
Okay, you can continue to look at that throughout the day and even encourage you to spend a minute this afternoon with your spouse, just being vulnerable and sharing with them maybe what stirred up in you and maybe one of those or two of those or three of those symptoms that you see in your own spillage, if you will, out of your cup. So what we want to do for the rest of our time this morning is to actually help you start to empty your cup. As you might imagine, you know, if you're sitting there looking at that cup and putting your own overlay onto it and going, yeah, man, wow, a lot of emotion in me, a lot of negative emotion in me, got to get rid of some of this, what do I do? Well, there's a number of different ways, things that that God has given us insight on. But there's one way that we're going to focus on right now that is the most powerful, helpful, effective way to empty your cup. Now, think about all the hurt that's in your cup. It got in there from people. And there's only two kinds of people in the world. There's either your spouse or everybody else. Okay, so think about, we got two buckets. We got spouse, everybody else. All right, so there's one way to heal, to empty the cup. If it's the everybody else, non-spouse pain, and then there's the, well, what if it's my spouse that caused the pain? Okay, what we're going to talk about right now is the everybody else part. Tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about how do you empty your cup. How do you heal if it's your spouse that caused the pain? So, if you look at the diagram back on page 15, and you think about the at the bottom of the cup there of the hurt, sadness, disappointment, right to the left of that is grieve the hurt and receive comfort. Right down next to that, Matthew 5, verse 4. Which says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall receive comfort. So if you have hurt caused by anybody, not your spouse, the way to handle that is to admit it hurt first. Blessed are those who mourn. Well, you're not going to mourn anything unless you admit that it hurt. If you just minimize it and say, eh, no big deal, then you're not going to mourn it, and therefore you're not going to receive comfort. Write down also next to that Romans 12:15, which says, we mentioned this one yesterday, but and we talked about it under that valid need for comfort. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. So, and then jot down again that verse we mentioned yesterday, 2 Corinthians 1:3, that says that God is the God of all comfort, who comforts us so that we may be able to comfort others with the same comfort. So this comfort, as that video talked about yesterday that we showed, it's empathy. Comfort is empathy. It's compassion. It's responding with heart, not head. Responding to another person's pain with compassion, empathy, heart, not with head. Lowell, go ahead and tee up this first video. This is a kind of a humorous depiction of a couple that's just getting their arms around this concept. They're trying to apply it. I think they may have come to Stacy and I's last workshop, and they're trying to figure out if this is how you do it or not. Let's see how they do in trying to apply this concept.
It's just, there's all this pressure, you know? And sometimes it feels like it's right up on me, and I can just feel it, like literally feel it in my head, and it's relentless, and I don't know if it's going to stop. I mean, that's the thing that scares me most, but I don't know if it's ever going to stop.
You do have a nail in your head.
It's not a nail.
Are you sure? Because, I mean, I'll bet if we got that out of there.
Stop trying to fix it.
No, I'm not trying to fix it. I'm just pointing out that maybe the nail is causing.
You always do this. You always try to fix things when I really need for you to just listen.
See, I don't think that is what you need. I think what you need is to get the nail.
See, I'm listening.
Okay, fine. I will listen. Fine.
Sometimes it's like there's this achy. I don't know what it is. No, my sweater's just mad. I mean, all of them.
That sounds really hard.
Yes.
Are they getting it? I think they're warming up to the idea. It's not about the nail. So turn over to the next page, page 17, where it says unproductive responses. So if you look at the top right hand of that page, where it says typical unproductive responses, this is how not to comfort someone when they're expressing pain, sadness, hurt. You see down under that, you see facts, logic, or advice. Man, this is for the first 10 years of my marriage. I was a master at this and just did it wrong. I still struggle with this, but I just gave Stacy tons of facts and logic and advice trying to fix her. Or, you know, there's criticism. You know, Stacy, in the first 10 years of our marriage, I could, when I came home from work, I could tell if she had had a conversation with her mom that day, because it just put her in a bad mood. And so I would just kick into that zone of, fixing that and, you know, trying to say, okay, you know, when your mom says that, you just need to do this. You need to say that. Or, you know, you just need to not let your mom get under your skin like that. You know, just don't let her hurt you the way you're letting her hurt you. You know, I mean, I was so full of, well, that's criticism. You know, you don't know how to handle your mom. Well, let me tell you how to handle your mom. That's just criticism. Complaints, well, I'm hurt too, you know, or neglect. You know, this is just the same old story. Let's just go to a movie tonight. You know, that's neglect or a pep talk. You know, Stace, do you remember how you handled this a month ago when you processed that with your mom and you did so good? Well, do that again. You know, you can do that. I'm with you. Let's do that. Well, that's given the pep talk approach. And so it's there's just lots of ways that you probably see yourself in those unproductive responses. Well, let's take another look. Lowell? Where did Lowell go? Hey, Lowell, if you're in the bathroom, it's time to come out. Well, you're not allowed to go to the bathroom.
He what? I said he needed something.
He has a need.
I'm ready.
Okay. So y'all may have seen the movie Spider-Man, and so do you remember an interaction Spider-Man had with his girlfriend where he was trying to apply the same principle? Let's see how he did when he tried this.
Yeah?
Me.
Oh! Hey!
I'm walking some doors.
It's stuck again?
How are you?
I'm coming.
Who are you?
Oh!
They hate it.
Well, they hate you.
The youngest Watson is a pretty girl. Easy on the eyes, but not on the ears. Her small voice didn't care to pass the first row.
That's ridiculous. I was right there.
You were in the first row.
Yeah, but listen, you were great. That's a critic. This is something you're going to have to get used to. Believe me, I know. Spider-Man gets attacked all the time.
This is about you. This is about me. It's about my career.
I know, but I'm just saying, you can't let it bring you down. You just gotta believe in yourself and pull yourself together and get right back on the horse.
Don't keep the horse then. Try to understand how I feel. It's just. I look at these words. It's like my father.
Go get a tire.
Okay. Look at that list of unproductive responses and tell me, what did you see Spider-Man doing that might be a little unproductive? Pep talk?
Neglect.
Complain. Excellent. He pretty much nailed them all, didn't he? Yeah, he's pretty good at kind of going through all of them. Well, so look at the bottom of the page, emotional responding. And look at the very bottom, examples of productive emotional responses. I can really see you are hurting for I'm sad to see you grieving. It saddens me to see you so fearful for her. I deeply care about you and love you. I regret this has happened to you, for you. It hurts my heart to know you are going through this. I feel such compassion. I can't imagine how hard this has been. I'm committed to going through this with you. You know, I'm going to share one story with you, and then I'm going to give you a chance to practice this with your partner, your spouse. So, some 25 years ago, when Stacy and I first heard this material, first started trying it out, we were at a workshop similar to this, and we were given the opportunity to practice this. And Stacy shared with me something she had never really realized before, and I had never heard before. I knew that Stacy suffered from at the hand of her mom, from her mom's alcoholic abuse. What she didn't realize until that very day was that even though her dad was not an alcoholic, all of a sudden the thought hit her, my dad could have stopped my mom from hurting me. My dad could have protected me. Why didn't my dad protect me? Why didn't my dad help? And she just had this wave of feeling, of emotion, and she began crying as she was mourning that pain. And I'm sitting next to her on a bed, and I've just been learning the unproductive responses. And so I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what do I say? What do I do? How do I do this better than Spider-Man? How do I handle this? What do I do? First thought that came to my mind is, well, I probably ought to just keep my mouth shut, because the majority of what comes out of my mouth is not productive. So I just sat there. I didn't say anything. I just put my arm around her, and I started doing another principle that we had been taught, which is try and put yourself in their shoes. Try and think what they might have gone through, what they might have felt, what life might have been like to be her. And I knew the childhood home that she grew up in. I had been there, and I pictured her dad at that kitchen table with her mom abusing her and him just passively sitting there doing nothing. And it made me angry at him, but I realized too that what God wanted to put into my heart was compassion, empathy for her. So I just started praying, God, give me your heart for her. And within a minute or two, he did. It was incredible. And I began to cry. Again, I didn't say anything. I'm just putting my arm around her crying. And she looks over, and very shortly, she stops crying. And I'm still crying, and she's not. And so I said, hey, can we go for a walk and talk about what just happened? So we start walking, and she said, you know, that was the most bizarre thing I've ever experienced. She said, I think I just had a Matthew 5:4 experience. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall receive comfort. I think I just got the blessing of comfort. When you began to cry for me, the reason I stopped crying is because it was as though that pain had been lifted off of me. I didn't feel alone in it anymore. I felt so loved. Well, that was a game changer for Stacy and I. We had never experienced anything like that before, and that led us down a new trajectory of relating to each other's pain at the point of the pain with heart, not head, with compassion, not facts and logic, with empathy, not trying to fix it. And then that began to spill over to our relationship with our kids, relating to their pain with compassion, with empathy, and not just trying to fix them. So this is not easy, because especially if you're like me, I grew up in a German home where there was no emotion. I virtually never cried in my life. I didn't feel anything. As a matter of fact, I had been trained early in my Christian journey that emotions need to be ignored, pressed down, pushed away. That emotion, you live by faith, not by feelings. And so therefore, the best thing to do with your emotions is kill them. So I was on a journey to just say, I am not going to feel anything. And then that way I can walk by faith. And then all of a sudden I see Jesus crying in the scriptures, and I'm going, wow. Okay, I think maybe I've carried this too far to say you're supposed to kill all your emotions, because evidently Jesus didn't kill his emotions. So that opened our world up to include comfort and has given us the ability and has caused us to be a safe place. Where when I come home from work, and if I've had something painful happen to me that day, I don't have a hesitancy to share it with Stacy, because I know that I'm going to get some comfort. I'm not going to get facts, logic, criticism, pep talk. I'm going to get some empathy. God wants us to be a safe place. He wants our families to be a safe place. That doesn't mean that we don't, the next day, a week later, come back with some facts and logic, some Bible verses, some truth. But it's when you do it. It's the timing. And at the point of the pain, that's not when you do it. So let's just practice it, okay? Turn to page 18. Think about a painful memory, perhaps from childhood, a memory of a time you felt lonely, unloved, misunderstood, rejected, or afraid. This time should not be related to your partner. This is non-partner pain. Recall an embarrassing moment, a time when failure was experienced, such as not getting a part in a school play or a sports team, a family tragedy experienced, being called names, witnessing something traumatic or frightening. Tell your partner about your painful memory. I remember when blank, and I felt blank. Partner, share words of comfort. What feelings do you have for your partner as you hear this painful memory expressed to you? You may find yourself feeling anger towards the person who caused this hurt. Concentrate instead on the feelings for your husband or wife and how they experienced this pain. Express your feelings of sadness and sorrow in comforting words such as, I feel a lot of compassion for you because I feel sad knowing that you. I want you to know that I care about you. I'm committed to go through this with you. I hurt for you. I'd like to understand your pain. It hurts my heart to know that because I love you. Obviously, those scripted words can sound a little bit formulaic. They can sound kind of canned. I get that. This is just something to practice. And you know what? If it's too uncomfortable, if it's too scripted, if it's too formulaic, just simply keep it as simple as, I'm really sorry that happened to you. I'm so sorry. So, I want y'all to do that right now. And you might want to, if you're seated right next to somebody and you want a little bit more room, she can spread out. There's a little bit of space around around here. Or if you're comfortable where you are, just do that. We're going to take about 10-15 minutes and just process this, and then Andy will call us back together. Let me pray for us. Father, I just thank you that you are the God of all comfort. I thank you that this is not something that man has created. This is not something that, but it is something you created, and it is your heart. And I thank you that you are, you don't just care about our sin. You don't just care that we walk in obedience, but that you actually are part of removing our aloneness and caring for us at the point of our pain. You call us your children, and you tell us to call you Abba, Father, Dad. That's what fathers and mothers do, is care and have compassion as well as other things. So, Father, I just pray now that you do give that blessing of blessed are those who mourn, for they shall receive. Give us that blessing now in Jesus' name.
Oh, Okay, guys, I have to be the heavy. I look around, see lots of conversation going. I hate to stop it, but we have some other things going on. So please, I would encourage you all. I think Randy mentioned this yesterday. Continue this in your free time today. At lunch, after lunch, take a walk with your partner and keep working at this. At this point, we've got some really great breakout sessions that I want to let y'all know about. And you don't have to do these either. You can keep on talking to your spouse if you want to. But we have several great options for you. The first one is with Sam Tischler. Sam, are you? Stand and wave. There he is back there. Yep. There's Sam Tischler in the Grace Room, which is where you checked in. The breakout session is, how do you live an eternally purposed life within the busyness of today's world? And that's in the Grace Room. This will go till 12 o'clock noon, all of these groups, by the way. And then you'll stop for picking up kiddos and getting lunch. The Schraders are going to be meeting in here, and their breakout topic, and by the way, it's on the back of your schedule, your blue piece of paper, your schedule. I'm just reading off of it. The Schraders are talking about feeling alone at times, even though I'm married. And that'll be here in the main meeting area. Jay Baker, Jay, raise your hand, where are you? There he is, back there in the back. Jay's also going to be leading a group in here called Spiritual Awareness. And he'll have some handouts, and he'll talk about figuring out where people are along the path of leading them toward Christ. It's a great topic. And then lastly, Gary and Terry Cutler. Can one of y'all raise your hand, Gary? Terry, right there? Okay. They're going to be in Cow Barn 1, which I think is the first building up the path toward the... Okay, three buildings up the roadway headed toward the cafeteria. It's on the left or the right? Okay, it's on the right side toward Pheasant Run. Right?
It's on that side.
Yeah, okay. And that's Humility, What's in It for Me. So those are the breakout sessions. A few quick announcements. The book table over to the left is the honor system. If you get something, please leave your money or write down what you got so that somebody can track you down for payment. you don't have it on you today. The bubble machine, which is a big hit, if it's not too windy, it'll be set up down near the Moe slide. Right, guys? Angie was reminding me. The wind has been, I look outside right now, it's pretty windy. I doubt it's going to drop off. But just show up with a plan B in mind. If it's too windy, get in the river, what have you. There's plenty of options.
And we'll try to do it again Thursday.
Right. Yeah, the backup is if it doesn't work today, they'll try it again Thursday. Thank you all. What time? You said 1:30?
1:30.
About 1:30.
Right.
What's on the schedule?
It doesn't say.
1:30, so if it doesn't work, we'll do it Thursday for sure.
Thursday, 1:30?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, father-son volleyball game today at 3:30. And then there'll be a testimony after the game, I believe. Just a reminder, guys, men, this is for the men. At 6:30 in the mornings, Sam Tischer has led a group of guys here to pray for our wives and our children. It helps guys to capture a vision about what's going on, take it back with you to the world, wherever that is for you. But that's at 6:30 in the mornings. I did it last year and I loved it. For some reason, I couldn't play volleyball and I did that. It's great. Please think about coming to that. Jay's group is meeting in here. Jay, do you need any help setting up chairs? Yeah, okay. I think that's it. Anybody else have any concerns or not anything need to be announced? The talent show? Lowell, are you getting people signing up for the talent show?
Not as many yet.
Okay. Moms and dads, remind your kiddos or y'all if you happen to have a talent, I'd love to see it. Just see Lowell. Okay, well, so those are your breakout sessions. Everybody enjoy your afternoon, and we'll see you tonight.